Good morning, it is 11 a.m. on Friday, August 1st, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christine Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. At the bustling street corner of Princess and Montreal Street, local artist Abby Nowakowski is hard at work painting a seldom-noticed traffic control box with the help of the city's public art coordinator, Taylor Norris. Nowakowski described her critter-inspired piece, finding home between the cattails and the trilliums.
The piece itself is inspired by lots of local critters that are here. So we've got like a northern flicker, great blue heron, trilliums, cattails, a fox, a turtle. And I chose all of those creatures by, I reached out to kind of my community on socials and asked like, you know, Kingston folks, what kind of critters would you like to see in this mural? So try to fit as many as possible onto this box.
This piece is part of the Traffic Control Box Pilot Project, an initiative to brighten downtown by transforming traffic control boxes along Princess Street into vibrant pieces of public art. The project aims to support local artists, bring vibrancy to the downtown core, while also helping to deter graffiti. The city has commissioned 5 local artists working in different styles and mediums: Ben Nelson, Grace Dixon, Sasha Jimenez French, Aaron Wun, and Abby Nowakowski. Norris noted that local businesses and city staff have been advocating for this initiative to bring some more color downtown. Norris shared a bit more about this project with CFRC.
So for the first phase of this project, I have been working with local artists to sort of experiment with using these traffic control boxes as a platform for public art in downtown Kingston. So we're doing 2 different strategies. We're going to do a couple that are painted with murals. So that's what Abby and I are doing today. And then 2 others will be done in a vinyl wrap, just to see how the project works, how the community likes it, if painting is better than vinyl, if they both work. So for this first phase, I directly commissioned artists through our temporary public art program and our policy were able to do that. So I invited Abby. I had seen her mural work before and I thought it would be a great addition to the pilot project to experiment with. And I know that Abby would be a really good fit for this location at Montreal and Princess in front of Rocking Horse. So that's, yeah. Normally these boxes are just painted black. They hold all the controls for traffic lights at every intersection that has them. So they're like a really great just blank canvas.
For artists like Nowakowski, opportunities like this have been few and far between in the past. But she notes the landscape is changing with projects like this.
Have opportunities like this been becoming more abundant in Kingston? What's kind of the landscape that we're looking at?
That's a really good question. I feel like I want to say yes, that it has become more abundant, but I think that's because there's people like Taylor who are actively wanting to create and advocate for opportunities. But with that advocating, we need more funding, right? So the more people see cool things like this and appreciate, it means there's gonna be in the future more need and want for artists to be paid for, you know, creating culture in Kingston, because there's so many local artists here. So it's nice to kind of pull on what we already have happening here in Kingston.
Artists are also adapting, making sure they're ready to take on unique opportunities.
Being an artist today means like wearing a lot of different hats. When we get access to, you know, art making opportunities, paid art making proper opportunities, it's easy to jump on them and say a hard yes, because those type of opportunities unfortunately don't come up that often. It's a pleasure to be gifted this opportunity.
With this first wave of public art underway, Norris hopes the project can continue to bring color to unexpected places.
I mean, we've got no shortage of these traffic control boxes across the city. And we've got no shortage of like pre-existing like utilitarian architecture and infrastructure that can be activated as platforms for public art. So this first phase, we're working at all the kinks, you know, like the boxes are all in different condition. So what are the prep needs? What is the cost of prep? Like, what contractors do I need to work with? What work do I need to do? What artists will work best? You know, it takes 3 to 4 days to install a mural, so that requires us to be on site. So that means we have to navigate weather, traffic, all those sorts of things. And then with the vinyl, it gives me an opportunity to work with artists who work in digital mediums, digital illustration, graphic design. And then those boxes require a different level of support and prep to get the art onto those. So I'm hoping we'll see how everything goes over the winter, see how the murals last, what damage happens, if any, hopefully not, and then the community feedback. And ideally, we'll be able to expand the program next summer to more and more locations across the city.
Two boxes are complete and three are still in progress, and passersby downtown are already taking notice.
We're just really excited to be able to get more ground level opportunities.
Thank you. I'm not used to making in such a public sphere, so it's actually been such a nice and validating thing to be actively making and having the people who will be admiring this for the next little while. And, you know, this is ultimately they're all going to own this piece, basically, because now this is going to be in their neighborhood. So to hear everyone kind of being like, oh, that's so nice, it makes us feel good. Yeah.
No, it's great. It's been really positive, and a lot of people didn't even know these boxes were here. Mm-hmm. So now that they've got these murals on them, they're like, how long has this box been here? And we're like, over a decade. Yeah, just to be able to bring some vibrancy and some beautiful art to a street corner will hopefully, you know, brighten everybody's day as they pass by, kind of thing.
The Great Lakes Museum has announced that the SS Kate Wayton has been selected as the 2025 Museum Ship of the Year by the Steamship Historical Society of America, SSHSA. The Kate Wayton, an Edwardian-era passenger steamliner, was acquired by the museum in 2023 and opened to the public in May 2024. The SSHSA is a nonprofit organization founded in 1935 that now has thousands of members. Their mission is recording, preserving, and sharing the history of engine-powered vessels for education and research purposes. The Kate Wayton was nominated for this award by SSHSA members and chosen by the organization's awards committee. Great Lakes Museum Executive Director Beth Shippers shared her initial thoughts when she heard the news.
We were thrilled. We were absolutely thrilled that we were chosen by the Steamship Historical Society of America for this award. They have members that are international, and there's thousands of members. So the fact that we were nominated and then chosen by them was really kind of awe-inspiring for us. We are thrilled mostly because of how it acknowledges the hundreds of people that have been working hundreds of thousands of hours over the past many years, you know, tirelessly renovating her and promoting her through public educational programs. And we also, you know, are thankful because it also, recognizes that the community that's been supporting the ship and the museum, contributions from donors and foundations and governments and local organizations that also support us in kind with materials and labor, you know, all of which working towards her preservation and the success that she has as a tourist destination. And, you know, getting the recognition for that has been really special for us all.
Shippers also dove into the work staff, volunteers, and board members have been putting in behind the scenes.
The ship will be a labor of love for many, many years ahead. When she arrived in October 2023, there was probably up until the weekend we opened for tours, people were working every single day for probably 10, 12 hours a day, working on, you know, new carpets, renovating, repainting and working on handrails and revarnishing, like the number of things that were being worked on. I can't even explain them all. There's so many. Everything from fixing up the engine room. The engine is spotless. They spent so much time cleaning her up and making her very presentable for the public so that we could actually explain what they're looking at. Also, I would mention the hundreds of hours of the staging crew that went through and itemized all the artifacts that are on the ship. So everything from clothing to records to instruments. magazines, silverware, everything that, you know, that came with her, and staging her to be presentable as though you were a passenger walking on. So you have that feel of the passenger experience. It's been a lot of work.
The museum celebrated the recognition on Saturday, July 26th.
We had members from the SSHSA come down, and that's the Steamship Historical Society of America. So members of their board came down. We had Ted Hsu was here, our MPP. We had the deputy mayor. We had board members. Community people came out from across Kingston. Lots of staff and volunteers were here. It was like a really nice celebration.
It was announced on Tuesday that a new connection will link Kingston's Norman Rogers Airport to Toronto Pearson International Airport. Air Canada, in partnership with ground transportation company Landline, is launching a service to bring passengers from YGK Airport to Pearson via a luxury motor coach service. The service, which launches on September 23rd, is being billed as a seamless connection. Travelers can book a single itinerary on Air Canada's website, check in at Kingston's airport, and continue on to a connecting flight from Pearson, all under one booking. Two round trips will run daily between YGK Airport and Pearson, with the bus having space for 36 passengers. Bernard Tavernier, manager of regional airlines and markets with Air Canada, expanded on what the service will offer.
This innovative ground-air connection is designed to make regional travel more convenient, reliable, and accessible. Customers can now book a single itinerary through Air Canada that includes a comfortable Wi-Fi equipped motor coach ride with Kingston, from Kingston to Pearson and vice versa, all timed perfectly within the Air Canada flights. We'll introduce a double daily service connecting customers from airport to airport, providing seamless airline experience. Travelers will enjoy checked baggage transfer, coordinated schedules, and the ease of going from Kingston to global destinations through one smooth connection.
Tavernier also had the following response when asked about the price point.
So the goal for this is to have minimal fare, if not none, and to beat all markets. We want to ensure that customers that are using this are using it as an asset to book on Air Canada flights. So the goal is to beat every other market out there.
Since Air Canada suspended its regional flights to and from Kingston Airport in 2020, the city has been working to bring air service back. Craig Desjardins, Director of Strategy, Innovation, and Partnerships with the city, spoke to the significance of this addition to travel options.
It's been incredibly challenging. Obviously, post-pandemic, the aviation sector has just been hammered. But to be able to be constantly working to try and bring air services back, it's been frustrating at times. The most recent frustration is the U.S.-Canada tariff issues, which has had huge impact on sort of travel to the States, which has obviously impacted the airlines. But, you know, again, working with good partners is the key. Working with a partner like Air Canada that has the global network, being able to come into Pearson Airport and jump on and be here directly. Again, it's all about service. It's all about quality. If you haven't had a chance to jump on the bus, it's like a business class seating. It's got high-speed Wi-Fi. It's a pretty nice service.
City Councilor Wendy Stevens says the service will be a game changer for local travelers.
The multimodal nature of this is really exciting, and I think it really is an opportunity to remove a lot of the frustration that comes with going to Pearson Airport when you can board here and get there and come home so easily. I think that this is, you know, a real opportunity. There have been calls for this from the community. I'm the district counselor and I get a lot of questions about when are we getting service back. So I'm thrilled that we finally have the ability to get people around the world where they need to go straight from home. So this is really exciting for students, for faculty, as the deputy mayor said, for residents who want to take a vacation, economic development. People are always trying to come to Kingston, and also for tourism, especially too. That's a really key factor. So I think this is a huge win for our community.
The Ontario Land Tribunal has approved of a controversial development on the Davis Tannery lands. Council rejected developer Jay Pathry's proposal to build mixed-use residential and commercial buildings in the area in 2022, a decision that was celebrated by environmental groups as the development will require the clear-cutting of 2,000 trees and will be on land that has been contaminated by years of industry. This decision was appealed by the developer, and ultimately the Ontario Land Tribunal largely agreed. In his 78-page decision dated July 25th, Tribunal Vice Chair Steve Cook wrote, quote, The tribunal is persuaded by the evidence that the proposal promotes efficient development of land, accommodates a large range of appropriate mixed uses, intensifies uses within the settlement area, and contributes to the range of housing options. The development will provide approximately 1,600 housing units, including 100 affordable units. Cook also went on to write that the tribunal was not persuaded by concerns raised, given the evidence offered in support of the planned development. Carrie Hill with No Clear Cuts Kingston, an environmental group which had party status at the hearing, spoke with CFRC after the decision was released.
Flabbergasted really to hear, but at the same time, with Bill 23 last year, it was almost a foregone conclusion.
According to the city's release on Monday, while the Land Tribunal has approved the development, amendments need to be made to both the official plan and the zoning bylaw. Those amendments will be shared in a draft of the new official plan, which will be released to the public in mid-August. One of the significant amendments to the plan is the decision to not allow the developer to cap wetlands at the site.
They are not going to allow the capping of the BSW. So that is very good. We're happy about that. We're not happy about the loss of all that tree coverage. The city, the trees being cut down all around us.
In a statement from the city released earlier this week, Mayor Brian Patterson was quoted stating, quote, "This development marks a major step forward for Kingston, bringing much-needed housing to the urban core and remediating the largest brownfield property in the city. I'm excited to see how this project will contribute to the renewal and revitalization of Kingston's Inner Harbor." Hill states No Clear Cuts Kingston will continue to advocate for their cause however they can.
All we can do at this point, I think, is talk to our counselors that we know are on side, which aren't that many left. I mean, when they voted 8-5 against it, that was an old council, you know, before the election a year and a half ago. So we would really like to try to convince the newer members of council that they have to be very careful and ask a lot of serious questions about this whole development. And also, we have our lawyers from the CEWA, Canadian Environmental Law Association. They are looking into they're reading carefully through their decision and will be helping us, guide us to what we can do next.
Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Friday, August 1st, it's going to be 24 more sunny and clear conditions forecasted. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, August 2nd, daytime high of 25, feeling closer to 27. Sunday, August 3rd, daytime high of 27. It's going to be a beautiful, picture-perfect long weekend here in the city of Kingston. And then moving to the start of next week, the holiday Monday, daytime high of 26, feeling closer to 28 with light humidity factored in. This is the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week. Here are the road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 to Middle is closed until August 15th for the removal and replacement of a culvert. Albert Street, Princess and Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Brock Street, Division to Palace is closed until July 31st from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day for road resurfacing. Carlton Street, Alfred de Guy is closed until August 8th for a gas main installation. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria, Princess to North Bartlett is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Wise Street, Woodbine to Megan is closed until July 31st to accommodate construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. service. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Accommodation Road, 6th concession to White Church, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Abidon Road, middle to Highway 2, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catterockway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Collins Bay Road, Woodbine to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes landscaping work on Collins Bay Road. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic is down to one lane in each direction. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Garrett Road, 6th concession to Sandhill, expect delays while a contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Highway 2 to Abidon and St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2 and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main sidewalks, and road. And White Church Road, 6th concession to Woodburn. Expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. To kick off the second half of the show, we have a few messages directly from the City of Kingston this week. Changes coming in 2026 for a request to light up City Hall. Community requests to light up City Hall and Springer Market Square will soon follow a new process due to updates to the city's first capital illumination policy. The policy was updated at the City Council meeting on June 17, 2025, after staff proposed changes in response to challenges with the previous policy, including a high volume of illumination requests. The updates will apply to illuminations taking place as of January 1, 2026. The illumination policy sets guidelines for illuminating First Capitol Place, City Hall, and Springer Market Square to mark occasions such as celebrations or commemorations and raise awareness of local history, special events, or community issues. As for why the policy was updated, the illumination policy sets guidelines for illuminating First Capitol Place to mark occasions. Previously, the illumination policy allowed for all requests that met the policy criteria, and there were no limits to the number of illuminations. There are several occasions the city recognizes every year, but most illuminations are requested by community organizations. Charities and nonprofits request displays to honor significant days and raise awareness of occasions that are meaningful to the community. The city facilitates these requests by illuminating City Hall and Springer Market Square to amplify community voices and foster belonging. Vanessa Mensa, Manager of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, states, quote, "Illuminations are a form of community-led expression. This initiative highlights the lived experiences, histories, celebrations, and shared values of everyone who calls Kingston home. Staff have revised the policy to better align with the evolving needs of the community and respond to the growing number of illumination requests." Mensa added, quote, "The increased frequency of illuminations can potentially diminish the impact of each display. The changes to the policy will help emphasize the significance of each illumination and its importance within the community. Based on consultation and after researching best practices, the policy was updated to include a total of 90 illuminations per calendar year. This includes 72 illuminations available for public requests, with 18 remaining illuminations listed on their website, reserved annually for occasions that align with Kingston's strategic plan and equity, diversity, and inclusion principles. Mensa states, quote, "The updated policy ensures that illuminations reflect Kingston's cultural, historical, and other significant observances to create a welcoming environment for all community members. Applicants will continue to apply online through My Kingston. Illumination requests are no longer reviewed on a first-come, first-served basis. Applications will be reviewed every 3 months. View the full 2026 application schedule on the Memorials and Commemorations page. Applications received after the quarterly deadline will not be eligible for the associated period. Around 15 to 20 applications will be approved each quarter. Applications must be made by nonprofit or charitable organizations based in Kingston or with a local chapter. Staff will process and approve applications and report back to the EDI Advisory Committee during their quarterly meetings. These changes will come into effect for illuminations that take place as of January 1st, 2026. Illumination applications for 2025 will be processed according to the previous policy. As part of the city's commitment to reconciliation with Indigenous peoples and communities, City Hall will continue to be illuminated monthly as a visible commitment to community healing and in honor of the victims of residential schools. Illuminations are just one way to commemorate meaningful occasions in Kingston. Interested groups can also apply for the Neighborhood Activation Fund, Free Space Initiative, a proclamation, or a flag raising to recognize a significant day or event. Once again, that was a message directly from the City of Kingston concerning changes coming in 2026 for a request to light up City Hall. In another message directly from the City of Kingston this week, City seeks public input ahead of relaunch of Better Homes Kingston program, calling all homeowners interested in making their homes more energy efficient and climate friendly. The City of Kingston is seeking input to inform the relaunch of the Better Homes Kingston program. Launched in 2022, the Better Homes Kingston program is a local improvement charge, financing program that supports energy retrofits for residential dwellings. With support from the Federation of Canadian Municipalities Green Municipal Fund, the pilot program offered up to $40,000 in loans and incentives to help homeowners reduce greenhouse gas emissions through upgrades like air source heat pumps, solar panels, and improved insulation. 368 completed projects achieved an average GHG reduction of 66% per project, making it one of the most successful energy retrofit programs in Canada. The Better Homes Kingston program is expected to relaunch in 2026. Soren Christensen, project manager of the Climate Leadership Division at the City of Kingston, states, quote, "We're incredibly proud of what the community achieved through the pilot program. Now we're looking ahead to 2026 and want to hear from residents and contractors to ensure the next phase is even more accessible, impactful, and aligned with local needs." To get involved, you can take the survey on Get Involved Kingston before August 14th. Alternate formats are available upon request. You can sign up for the waitlist to receive updates about the program launch. Contractors and others who provide a service are invited to complete the service provider survey. You can also express interest in participating in the September focus groups when submitting your feedback. Once again, that was a message from the city seeking input ahead of the relaunch of Better Homes Kingston in 2026. In a final message directly from the city this morning, Emancipation Day celebrations, remembering the past and working towards a better future. August 1st is Emancipation Day, marking the day Britain's Parliament abolished slavery across most of the British Empire in 1834. It has become an annual day of remembrance and reflection on the struggle for human rights and the ongoing work to eliminate racism and discrimination in Canada. To recognize Emancipation Day in Kingston, a flag-raising ceremony with Mayor Patterson, members of council, and local community leaders will take place at 11:30 a.m., followed by a community services fair from 12:30 to 3 p.m., both in Confederation Park on Friday, August 1st. Vanessa Mensa, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Manager with the city, states, quote, "Emancipation Day asks us not only to remember that slavery existed, but to confront how its legacies still live on. It's a call to reckon with the past, honor the strength of those who survived it, and challenge the systems that continue to deny true freedom today. Attending the city's Emancipation Day event is more than just showing up. It's an act of recognition, a step towards learning, and a commitment to building a more just and equitable future together," end quote. Emancipation Day is free to attend and open to all ages. Learn more about Emancipation Day on the city's website. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Coming up next on CFRC's Friday afternoon lineup, at 12 p.m. we have Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, daily global independent news. At 1 p.m. this just in, new music fresh from the mail, hosted by our music library manager, Chancellor. At 2 p.m. we have Whiplash, anything and everything with DJ LFN. And at 3 p.m. we have the Kingston Curator, all things Kingston local art scene with host Ellie Sturton. Be sure to stay tuned for all this programming and more right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.